Welcome to Rati Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Kosowski, and today we will be studying Megillat Esther, Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. At first glance, if we read through Megillat Esther, it is not an obvious candidate to be one of our Sifrei Kodesh, our holy books of Tanakh. The book is set in the Persian court with barely a mention of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. The Jews of the time are clearly assimilated into Persian culture. There are descriptions of lavish drunken parties. Our heroine Esther intermarries. And most significantly, Hashem, God, is not mentioned in the Megillah. As we learn this book together, we will be thinking about why this book earned its place in Tanakh and how timeless its messages are. We begin Perek Aleph, Chapter 1, with an introduction to Ahasuerus, king of the Persian Empire, from Hodu to Kush, 127 provinces. The Megillah begins with three parties, which are held in the third year of Ahasuerus' reign. The guest list for the first includes Ahasuerus' officers, members of his court, the army, nobles, and governors of each province. This party lasts for 180 days. The text tells us that this party gave Ahasuerus the opportunity to show off et osher kivod malchuto v'et yakar tiferet gedulato, the wealth of his honorable kingdom and the precious glory of his greatness. This is followed by a seven-day party for the people of Shushan, the capital city, to which the entire population of the capital is invited. The psukim, the verses of the Megillah, detail from top to bottom the elaborate way in which the king's palace garden courtyard was decorated. There is unlimited drinking available from gold vessels. The third party is thrown by Vashti the queen for women. I'd like to consider the significance of these parties and the significance of parties in this Megillah in general. When we think about parties thrown by political rulers, we know there's often a political agenda. Is this true of these parties? Two great sages of the Talmud, Rav and Shmuel, debate Ahasuerus' intelligence in Masechet Megillah Yudbet Amud Aleph, 12a. Chad amar melech pikeachaya, v'chad amar melech tipeshaya. One views him as a shrewd king, and the other views him as a foolish king. The discussion in the Talmud continues by debating the relative merits of hosting a party for those who live further away before those right near Ahasuerus in the capital city, as opposed to having done it the other way around. The implication of this debate is that the point of these parties was for Ahasuerus to curry political favor from those whom he invited. This can be connected to a comment of Rashi on Pasuk Bet, verse 2 in Megillat Esther, which describes the timing of the parties as Kishevet HaMelech Ahasuerus al Kisei Malchuto, when the king Ahasuerus was sitting on his throne. Rashi explains, Kishenitkayem HaMalchut Biyado, when the kingdom had been established in his hands. This seems to indicate that Ahasuerus spent the first 3 years of his reign solidifying his rulership, which fits with the suggestion of Rav a page earlier in Masechet Megillah, on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, 11a, that Ahasuerus had taken power and was not an heir to the throne. If so, we can look at these parties as part of Ahasuerus' political campaign to acquire and maintain control of the Persian Empire. In this vein, it is interesting to note that there is a custom when publicly reading Megillat Esther to switch tunes for the description of the drinking from gold vessels at the second party to the tune we use for Echa, the Megillah which laments the destruction of Jerusalem. This custom is based on the suggestion of the Gemara that amongst the vessels being used for this party were clay Beit HaMikdash, the vessels that had been previously dedicated to service of Hashem in our holy temple. We can imagine that perhaps these parties didn't only feature our national religious treasures, which had been stolen and now used. Perhaps there were treasures being used from other nations now subject to the Persian Empire as well. In this way, these parties may have had an intimidation factor in showing off power and wealth stolen from the nations of the attendees, in addition to the element of trying to win over those in attendance. This perspective fits with the view of Ahasuerus as a shrewd king. We will see as the chapter continues that there is reason to see Ahasuerus as a fool as well. This ambiguity persists throughout the Megillah. Our perek, our chapter, continues on the seventh day of the party for the inhabitants of the capital city of Shushan, which seems to be running concurrently to Vashti's party for the women, when a drunken Ahasuerus sends seven attendants to bring Vashti in her crown to show off her beauty to the nations and officers. Vashti refuses to come, severely angering Ahasuerus. The king asks seven advisors what to do about this refusal. One of them, Memuchan, suggests that this refusal on Vashti's part is likely to spread around the kingdom. He says in Pasuk Yotet, verse 19, that a law should be passed, Asher lo tavo Vashti lifnei hamelech Ahasuerus, umalchuta yitein hamelech leruta hatova mimena. That Vashti will no longer come before the king Ahasuerus, and her queenship will be given to another who is better than her. Rashi, following a suggestion in Masechet Megillah Yotet Amud Aleph 19a, interprets this as a death sentence for Vashti. Alshich interprets it as banishment from the king to avoid a future reconciliation, which could end up backfiring on Memuchan. The chapter ends with the king and his officers approving of Memuchan's suggestion, which the king follows, sending out an edict to all 127 provinces, each in their own language, decreeing that each man will rule his household and dictate that his language will be spoken in the home. There are many different interpretations of the dynamics of this conflict between Ahasuerus and Vashti and the role of Memuchan, who is identified by our sages as Haman. I would like to focus on it as a power struggle along the lines of the suggestion we discussed regarding Ahasuerus' purpose in throwing these parties in the first place. In Masechet Megillah Yud Amud Bet 10b, Rabbi Yonatan suggests that Vashti was the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar, that she was of royal lineage. If we combine this with Rav's suggestion mentioned earlier, that Ahasuerus was not an heir to the throne, and we follow the suggestion that Ahasuerus was a shrewd king consolidating his power, attempting to demonstrate his power over Vashti may have been a calculated move. This line of thinking is suggested by Alshich and highlighted by a close reading of the text. When reading Tanakh, it is informative to note what characters are called in different contexts. When we are introduced to Vashti in Pasuk Tet, verse 9, she is called Vashti Amalka, Vashti the Queen, with her name first and then her title, as opposed to Ahasuerus, whose title precedes his name. Indeed, Vashti Hamalka, name first, then title, is how Ahasuerus refers to her when asking his attendants to fetch her. But when she refuses the summons in Pasuk Yud-Bet, verse 12, she is called Hamalka Vashti, the Queen Vashti. Alshich suggests that she is indicating the supremacy of her rank and that she need not submit to her husband. Malka Vashti, Queen Vashti, is then what she is called in Pasuk Tetva, verse 15, when Ahasuerus discusses how to respond to the problem she poses by not having listened. When Memuchan suggests his solution, he first demotes her back to Vashti Hamalka, Vashti the Queen, in Pasuk Tet Zayin, verse 16. And ultimately, he just calls her Vashti in Pasuk Yotet, verse 19, when he suggests stripping her of her role as queen. If indeed this was a power struggle, Ahasuerus has definitively won as the sole power in his empire, creating a very challenging situation for Esther later in the story. We started off today's learning noting the unusual nature of Megillat Esther when compared to other books of Tanakh. I would like to suggest that the Persian court to which we are introduced is meant to startle us and to highlight how antithetical it is to Torah values. In the ancient world, kings like Paro and Ahasuerus viewed themselves as gods. The Torah teaches us that there is only one true God. The kings of Israel are expected to recognize that their role is to serve that one true God. In Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Kaftet Pasuk Yud Aleph, chapter 29, verse 11, David HaMelech, King David, declares, Lecha Hashem ha-gidula v'ha-gevura v'ha-tiveret v'ha-netzach v'ha-hod. To you, Hashem, is the greatness and the strength and the glory and the eternality and the splendor. He continues in the following pasuk, Yud Bet, verse 12, to indicate v'ha'osher v'ha'kavod milefanecha, and wealth and honor come from you. A number of these words, osher, kavod, tiferet, wealth, honor, glory, are used in our chapter to describe what Ahasuerus was showing off about himself. This is in sharp distinction to our Torah perspective that Hashem is the true source of power and glory. In addition to the implied condemnation of the values of the Persian court, I think there is an element of satire which can be detected in the descriptions of the Persian court and its quote-unquote laws. The first law we encounter is back in the description of the second party in Pasuk Chet, verse 8. V'hashtiyah kadat ein ones, ki chen yisad hamelech al kol rav beito lasot kirtzon ish va'ish. Drinking was according to the law, no forcing, for this is what the king established for each master of his house to do what each person willed. Rashi explains that this is as opposed to forcing people to drink too much or denying them as much drink as they want, and yet there is something comical about establishing a law which states that everyone can do what he wants. Amos Chacham, the author of the Dot Mikra commentary on Megillat Esther, points out the hilarious contrast between the description of the power and might displayed by Ahasuerus at his parties and the degradation of a drunk king looking to debase his wife in front of a crowd and her refusal to follow his command. In this way, Ahasuerus plays the fool, and the next law involves all the pomp and circumstance of consulting with advisors to pass a law to solve his domestic squabble and magnifying it into a national problem. Perek Aleph, chapter 1, introduces us to the Persian court in all its glory and degradation, and to the perhaps shrewd, perhaps foolish, and easily manipulated King Ahasuerus, who eliminates his queen Vashti, setting the stage for the further unfolding of the events we will learn about in the following chapters.
Thank you for studying together in the memory of our beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordin, Mordechai ben Ephraim v'Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael, Helen and Moshe Sassover and family.